Hi, my name's Nick, and welcome to Cinemates, a podcast where a bunch of mates chat about cinema over some drinks. Today, I'm joined by Cinemates CEO Michael Sestouli and Tom Costigan. Join us while we go over the best films of 2023 and share our Oscar predictions. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Cinemates.
Got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Open the pod bay doors now.
You shall not
have! Keep your friends close, but your enemies close.
I am nothing! No!
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
Get busy, Larry.
Gentlemen, Nick and Costi.
Ding dong.
How are we?
Welcome.
Great. Very good, mate. Very excited for this 2023. What a year, because we did last year, us three.
We did, yes.
The Oscar predictions. Mm. Since then, we've had some terrific
films.
Films coming out.
Do you think it was a better year? Like, this year was better than 2022?
Oh, man. I don't know. Like, that's such a hard question. I'm going to say equal in my eyes at the moment. Mm. What about you?
I think it was better.
You think it was better?
Yeah,
okay.
Significantly better.
I think it's definitely getting better for sure. I think the franchise like hangover is happening and everyone's sort of starting to get sick of all of the big budget, even though they're still getting made.
Mm-hmm.
But I think everyone's starting to wake up and go, actually, these are terrible films.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of original like one-off solo movies this year.
Yep.
But great year of film.
Yep.
Very surprising year as well. But we'll get into it. Before we do, quick shout out to our sponsors, El Toro Tequila, authentic Mexican tequila.
Yummy.
We're not actually drinking them because it's a Friday morning. But nonetheless, great cans and great tequila.
They are very nice.
I love cans.
yeah, you do, sicko. But let's get into it. We're just going to be running through basically all the nominations, give our takes, any ones that missed out, any other films that were good throughout the year. So first category, best sound. We've got The Creator, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1, Oppenheimer, and The Zone of Interest.
Unfortunately, haven't seen Zone of Interest yet. I think we were just saying it's not out in Australia, is it?
Nah, 2 weeks.
Yeah. 2 weeks.
Two weeks.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm so excited for that one. Mm. We discussed a little bit about the sound there. Dude, I'll say this again. I've said it before. Sound in movies is so important.
Yeah.
Like sound and editing is so important. So that's why I love this category so much. Oppenheimer was great. The thing that comes to my mind when I think of like the sound in Oppenheimer is when the bomb went off.
Trinity test?
It was just dead silent.
Mm. Yeah.
And you were like,
You're like, did something go wrong?
Yeah. Just grips you. Like normally it would just be like a big fucking, you know, all the classic Hans Zimmer, like, you know, but loved Oppenheimer for that.
Yeah, I think incredible, just like little, also the sounds of the, his like visions of like particles and things. Like I have no idea how they made that. But I think for me, I haven't seen Maestro. I did see The Creator and Mission Impossible on my recent holiday on the plane.
Why Mission Impossible? Why is Mission Impossible?
I don't know.
I think for best sound, it's like sound mixing and sound editing. So it's like all the stunts that they do, everything that's interwoven into that.
Yeah, didn't he go off some cliff and like jump off a bike or some shit?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Have you seen it?
I did, yeah. I quite like the Mission Impossible films.
Did you see they've changed the title though? So they got rid of the part one and they just did Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Why?
I think because they've kind of realized that people don't really buy in anymore. Oh. So the whole part one, part two thing, especially to do with box office. They're like, well, if there's a part one, I'll just wait till part two comes out and then I'll watch part one then at home.
Yeah.
So you're kind of giving them.
Not me.
Yeah, I agree.
Surely not.
I agree. With Maestro, there's this one sequence. Have you seen it, Nick?
No, unfortunately, I haven't seen Maestro.
There's this one sequence. It goes for like 6.5 minutes where Bradley Cooper is playing Leonard Bernstein and he's composing, I think it's the London Symphony Orchestra or whatever. Yeah. And it's just like the sound. He's playing like this old, like 16th or 17th century like chapel, and you're just hooked for those. I got a lot of issues with the movie, but those 6 minutes, you're just completely hooked and transfixed, and the sound is just bellowing. Like I was able to see it in a cinema, and it's just bellowing all around you, and it was just unbelievable. But yeah, I think Oppenheimer, specifically the Trinity test, it's just the sound there is just ridiculous.
Yeah. It's good. I my pick for that would probably be, even though I hadn't seen Maestro, I'd probably say it would be, out of the ones I've seen, it would be Oppenheimer. That's like a sort of a bad answer. But man, I can't wait for Zone of Interest, and I definitely need to see Maestro because I've heard nothing but good things.
Yeah, exact same. I'm going the exact same thing. One quick thing, even though it's not related, I did have a gripe with the big stunt in Mission Impossible because
he goes off the cliff.
Simon Pegg's like, oh, you need to keep going straight. Yeah, and that's where the train is. And he's like, but there's a hill. And he's like, just go over it.
Yeah, it was like, it was obviously that they knew they wanted to do the stunt and they needed some sort of line to get him up there. It's like, no, you could have just, anyway, but still a fun stunt.
Very fun.
Very fun. I thought that was a fun movie. You can't underestimate fun movies.
No, absolutely not.
Tom, just give me Tom Cruise running in a movie and I'm hooked.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next one, costume design. We've got Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. This is a big category. Yeah,
those are all huge. Mm. Okay.
I'm going to come out and say that I think that Poor Things had the best costume design, so just because it was so quirky and like everything that Emma Stone wore, because she was obviously like coming into the world and it was like a baby. And what would a baby wear?
And you can see as well, like as her character develops, her kind of like sense of wardrobe develops as well. It's kind of like reflecting her character.
That's a big one.
And it's really like they never tell you in the movie like when it's set. Mm. So it's really like kind of like postmodern feel. It still feels like it's like early, like late 1800s, early 1900s, but some of the costumes there don't, like the men's costumes reflect that, but some of the women's don't reflect that. Yeah, so it's really, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's like mixed in between. So I think it's between like Poor Things and I think Killers of the Flower Moon, some of the costumes there, like some of the, I don't know how to describe it, but like the dresses and particularly like a lot of the stuff that Lily Gladstone's characters wearing and some of the Native American women are wearing, I think they're beautiful.
Yeah.
And then shout out to Barbie too, like just all the pink.
Obviously,
I just think it's so cool.
I thought for this one, Napoleon, like.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. There would just, have been extras. I mean,
the whole shebang, I just thought it was incredible. Mm. I don't think it'll win, but I did. I remember watching it and trying to pay close attention to the outfits. And I was like, they're good. They are quite nice. Mm. Although you did make a very strong case for Poor Things, I think that.
It's just a really good category.
Yeah.
It's a great category.
Again, like sort of swept under the rug with like most sort of casual moviegoers, but it's so important.
Mm. And great mix. Yeah, we've got some like historical period pieces. Well,
I think they're like 4 out of 5 of them are like period pieces, and then Barbie's kind of the only real modern one set. But even then, like when you're in the Barbie world, it's kind of like it's not really modern because it's like a different place.
They did. Barbie was so good. Did love the costumes.
Next category, we've got original screenplay, Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May December, and Past Lives.
Haven't seen May December.
Yeah, haven't. Is that the Julianne Moore?
Julianne Moore, Natalie Portman one with Childhood Messing as well. It's a really, really good movie. It's out in the cinemas now if you wanted to see it.
Yeah, I will. I mean, straight off the bat for me, Past Lives sticks out for me. Maybe it's just because that was one of my favorite movies of 2023.
Yeah.
Same here.
But wow. Well, I mean, quite original. Ripped my heart out. I mean, a great film. Goodness. What a great movie. I still need to watch that for my second viewing. I haven't done that yet.
The other thing with that is the director wrote it as well.
Yeah. It's written and directed.
She's an insane debut from her, and it's such a stunning movie. I haven't seen Anatomy of a Fall, but I've heard that's so really good.
So 3, which is out in the cinemas now, I would highly encourage everyone to see it. So 3 out of my top 5 movies of the year here, and Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, and Past Lives. Mm. Although I like The Holdovers more, I think my favorite like for screenplay, and it's been winning a lot of the precursor awards, is Anatomy of a Fall.
Okay. Mm.
I just think what they're able to do, like there's a lot of time in the movie where so it's essentially this woman gets accused of her husband's death. Right. And a lot of time they're going back and forth between, you know, before the husband died and then the case that's going on in the present moment. And there's a few scenes when they're in the court, when they're in the French court, and it's just, I don't know, the screenplay is just amazing. But also an important thing to note with this category is a few months ago or weeks ago, Barbie was originally in the original screenplay category, and then the Academy came out and said, no, it's actually adapted, even though it's not based on like a book or a text, because Barbie is like an actual like thing. A thing.
Oh,
they
that's
said
a weird
it's
little,
technically adapted.
Yeah.
I don't think that's fair, to be honest, but like, oh well, these are all like great films.
An object, like a toy.
Yeah.
Wow, that's...
And because there's heaps of like Barbie TV shows and Barbie movies, like kids' movies in the past too. Yeah. So you are kind of basing a lot of the character off that,
I suppose.
Probably a fair thing. Again, haven't seen them, but for me, yeah, my pick would be Past Lives. Holdovers was amazing as well. But yeah, next category, adapted. Got American Fiction, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things and Zone of Interest.
Oppenheimer was based off the book, the American
Prometheus.
That's right.
Which Robert Pattinson gifted to Christopher Nolan on the set of Tenet. That's because right. I think you would really like that.
Really?
And Christopher Nolan read it and then
no way.
Made him
That
made
is
him write.
Such a good fact. I love that.
Oh, made wow. Direct the movie.
And isn't it?
Again, Rob Pattinson proving why he's the best.
Yeah, he's the king. Yeah. Also, it was written in like first person.
First person, so
which
everything
never
is,
really done.
Yeah, everything is from Oppenheimer's point of view.
Oh,
which
wow!
Cillian Murphy said like he had never seen, and then all the actors had never say they had never seen that before in a script. And yeah, he's been winning all the precursor awards, Chris Nolan. I think it's easily his best written film that he's done. He gets a lot of criticism because I think like in the like when you've got movies like Tenet and Inception and like Interstellar, like a lot of his screenplays are just like exposition like he kind of ties himself up in knots with all the rules of each particular world, whereas this one, it's based on a book, so he's got that text there which I think really helps his writing. It's
based off real events as well.
And I think what I love about it too, like kind of what I was speaking about with Anatomy of Fall, is like kind of like the non-linear style of the movie. It's going back and forth like between Robert Downey Jr.'s scenes and then back to Los Alamos. So I think that's the favorite. It should be the favorite, and I think it'll be the winner.
Yeah,
I think so as well. I rewatched it on the plane coming home, and like, God, it's just so good. Like, it's got the three sort of
acts
and peak and trough, and it's just able to
just flows
flow so easily.
He was a winner with this one. Yeah. He's a fucking winner,
and we will talk about it.
He did such a good job.
Yeah, we will talk about it, but it ties into the screenplay as well. Like the editing to be able to bring the screenplay to the final product is just
would have been amazing. Whole, like all hands on deck for this one.
Yeah.
As per usual with a lot of Chris Nolan films. But like, wow, he really just can't wait to see what he has next. Like,
I know, that's what I came. He's doing all these interviews and no one's asked him what's next. And I'm just really fascinated to see what he does. Shout out to Tony McNamara, who's an Aussie. He's from Melbourne.
Really?
So he also wrote The Favourite a few years ago with Yorgos Lanthimos.
Wow.
And he's the creator of the show, it's on Stan with Elle Fanning and Nicholas Holt, and I'm blanking
on
right
The
now.
Great.
The Great, yeah. He's written and created that. So shout out to him. He's from Melbourne.
Well done.
Oh, my God.
Fellow Aussie.
Yeah. Really Aussies.
Got
him. Got him, Tony.
What was I going to say? Really keen to go back and watch like The Favourite and other Yorgos films.
Yes.
Having
Killing
watched
of a Sacred Deer, The Lobster. Yeah. This is his first one was Dogtooth, which I've never watched, but apparently it's just really weird. Which
he loves kind of the weird,
which kind of coincides with all of his movies.
Yeah, bit of a weird bloke.
we all agree, Oppenheimer, probably.
Yeah, I think so.
I'd probably say Oppenheimer.
I think it'll be a big theme in this. Yes. It will be probably taking a lot out. Speaking of original score, we've got American Fiction, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
Do you think that was a little bit of like a John Williams here? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
It's like whenever Meryl Streep gives a performance, let's give Meryl a nomination. Yeah. Which I don't get because like I think like Across the Spider-Verse, the score there by Daniel Pemberton, and then I don't know if you've guys seen The Boy and the Heron. Miyazaki's movie, the score in that is just fucking unbelievable.
Oh, so, God, so many movies.
I really don't, and I haven't seen American Fiction yet, so I can't talk about that, but I don't get the Dial of Destiny one.
Yeah, I think it is just a Meryl Streep type John Williams.
Again, like,
suck off.
Almost. I just, yeah.
I think this is like his 54th or 55th Oscar nomination.
No way.
Legit.
Oh my God.
This is ridiculous.
Come on.
He'd just he'd be going like, oh, yeah.
But also, it wouldn't be, I don't want to shit can John Williams. He's the GOAT.
Oh,
but
yeah,
like,
he's amazing.
It wouldn't be that original because, like, he's, like, they play the original Indiana Jones theme song throughout
which
the movie.
Which is amazing.
And then he, yeah. Which is unreal. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, like, he would just have, like, different variations on that. Yeah. And the movie, I thought it was so bad, the new one.
Terrible.
It was so, so bad.
You've seen it, right?
I didn't even bother because I knew exactly what it would be. Like, well, I just...
Basically, like, No Time to Die. Yeah. It could have been a nice opportunity to kill him and, like, end it and make it really sad.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that. Because they're probably going to milk, like,
it's just,
more.
I don't think Harrison Ford's going to do another one. He has too much integrity, even though he did this one, which is wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, but too much integrity, yet he's going to be in the Thunderbolts, the Marvel movie next year. So I think Harrison just loves the cash. Which,
do you think?
Yeah. Well,
he's so cashed up already.
It's just not believable as well, watching him run around Africa and Europe like, and punching people.
And how old is he now? He's in his 70s.
He's in the 80s, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Oh, my
it's like Robert. It's like the scene in The Irishman, Robert De Niro. He's like kicking the guy in the street. Yeah, saying, this looks so bad.
Yeah.
His body's not built for it anymore.
I do think we obviously can all hopefully agree that Ludwig. Oppenheimer is just, this is his best score, I would say.
Ludwig?
Tenet was like
Tenet
amazing.
Was good. Probably say it's his best.
Mandalorian.
The Mandalorian theme. Oh my God. And you know, he's the producer of Redbone, Childish Gambino as well, which is like one of my favorite tracks.
So talented.
Such a talented guy. He's, in my opinion, like the guy.
The guy
he's quite
right
young
now.
As well, like in his 30s.
Yeah.
So I have a clear memory. Obviously, like original scores,
they stick with you.
Mm. I have a clear memory of watching Oppenheimer on opening day in Berlin. And sitting next to two German families, and every time they mentioned the Nazis, I sort of went, and I remember the score. I stuck with me. And as soon as I left the cinema, I got out my AirPods and just got on it and walked all the way back to my hostel.
Yeah.
And then I sent the fellas a voice memo and they played it for the podcast.
Yeah.
It just stuck with me. And I listened to it on repeat when I was on holiday for a while to feel like the main character.
Mm.
And I think, in a movie that's about Oppenheimer, it's like the main character's Oppenheimer, it's all based around him. The score just really speaks to me, main character.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think a big criticism of the film, which I've heard from a lot of people, is that there's constantly music happening.
I like that. I was about to say that. I like it.
I quite enjoyed it. Yeah. And I thought the score was good. And I think you do sort of have to have that when it's such a dense film.
Yeah.
That's like dense, but also 3 hours and 30 minutes long, or however it was. It just keeps you hooked and it does such a job.
Well, a big criticism of like Nolan's last few movies is his sound mixing, like the dialogue.
Yeah.
It's not really clear. Like, Tenet was a major issue. Like a lot of the dialogue was muffled.
Yeah.
So I heard that there was a lot like what you were saying, the score was throughout the movie. And I was like, I hope it works out because he has had issues with it in the
past.
He
has had issues with it.
But again, it's just so good. Like the scene where where Oppenheimer's meeting with
Einstein.
It's who's the actor that plays Poirot in the Murder on the Orient Express? I'm just blanking.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm blanking Kenneth on
his
Branagh.
Kenneth Branagh. Yeah. And he meets his character and he goes, can you hear the music sequence?
Oh,
he goes, Robert, can you hear the music? And he just goes, bang.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's just phenomenal.
Yeah,
so
it
is so good.
It's a very phenomenal film. There's like that in Can You Hear the Music? There's like a ridiculous amount of tempo changes. And if you watch an orchestra play it live, it's crazy the movements they're doing. And I love how he incorporates the thing I love about Ludwig's scores is that he incorporates the – obviously he's a great composer, so he composes for the orchestra, but then he incorporates a lot of electronic elements into it. Like he's got a big modular synthesizer that he loves to put in. He's a great guitarist. He's always like weaving in little – like distorted electric guitars in there. He's just got a lot of attention to detail and I just love him.
Yeah, same with me. I've been rinsing the score ever since. Mm. And I think the way that the movie ends, like when he's talking with Einstein, he's like, I think we did. I've never been that hyped by a score.
And terrified.
At the very end of a film for a long time. And again, like to center the score around the violin and how it can be quite like haunting, but then quite like sort of soothing and beautiful and just like big as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just, yeah, takes a cake. Also, a bit more underrated and very different, but I really enjoyed the Past Lives score.
Oh,
we talked about it on our episode, like a lot of piano and very heartfelt.
And the music at the end when they're walking away and then he's driving off. It's just like, I had to listen to that nonstop.
That's a great.
So good. Score. But yeah, another big year for the score.
Okay. Editing.
Editing, we got.
Again, super underrated.
Big ones. Anatomy of the Fall, Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer and Poor Things. I'll quickly say, when I rewatched it on the plane, Oppenheimer, I was just like, the editor had to go through the black and white sequence and the color and like three different times. And they didn't skip a single beat where you didn't know what was happening.
Mm.
You didn't know who a certain character was. Like, and the screenplay was written in first person. Like, that is such a tough job to do. And they just nailed it.
Yeah.
Shout out Jennifer Lame. She did a great job.
She's great, Jennifer.
Shout out to also Thelma Schumacher, who has been Marty Scorsese's longtime collaborator. Her first movie was Raging Bull.
That's crazy.
She's just unbelievable. So she's worked in nearly every single movie he's done since then. It's just such an underrated part of the movie because if it doesn't work well, you're just sitting there just like something's off. Yeah. And like someone who may not watch a lot of movies, they'd be like, there was just something off about that movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time it would be the editing. Just how it kind of, and what we were talking about with Oppenheimer before, how it kind of just flows, like the music flows and each scene flows from one to another. I think it's really, really underrated.
Mm. I guess like all the other four movies, I don't know about Anatomy of the Fall, but I assume they're all like chronological. So I think, again, the job of Oppenheimer's editing by Jennifer Lame is just amazing.
I think Killers of the Flower Moon wasn't anything fancy in any way, but it just, You didn't notice it, so it just sort of flowed well, if I guess.
Mm.
I don't think it'll win, personally. I think definitely Sloppenheimer's got a great chance in most of its categories it's nominated for. But maybe we're just being like Christopher Nolan Kens.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Also, just quietly, I know we've talked about this once before, but Jennifer Lame, she's done Manchester by the Sea,
Ooh.
Hereditary, Midsommar, Ooh. Marriage Story, Tenet, Black Panther 2.
She was in The Black Messiah.
Oppenheimer, and just
that's a great
amazing film. Talent. I think she's blonde, I don't know how old she is, but she's pretty young and she's killing it.
Wow.
So keen to see what she does next. Next one, cinematography. We've got El Sonde, Kills of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. What do we think with this one?
So I think Hoyte van Hoytema for Oppenheimer is obviously the favorite, but I think shout out to Robbie Ryan for Poor Things.
Mm.
All the different colors that are going on, like a lot of time, like a bit of it's funny, like talking about it with Oppenheimer and Maestro, like all three of those movies. Like a chunk of them have black and white sequences in it. Like Poor Things, the first 20 minutes is, I think first 20, 30 minutes is black and white.
Mm.
But then once it goes from that, have you seen it, Nick?
No.
All the colors that they use is just like so vibrant.
Very
like
vibrant.
Amazing. Like it's just, it feels like it's set in like across Europe, like Paris, I think there's a sequence in Lisbon in Portugal.
Yeah.
But so like it's set in real world places, but it something seems like fantastical about it. Like it's otherworldly. And a big part of it is because of the cinematography. So I don't think Robbie Ryan will win for Poor Things, but I think if it wasn't to be Hoyte van Hoytema, I would give it to him.
Mm.
It just adds so much to the movie. It's really, really well done.
Yeah. They also use like the fisheye lens a lot.
Yes. Yes. A lot.
You think would be weird, but it just worked so well.
I think that's a stable for Lanthimos' directing style.
Maestro as well. I mean, I haven't seen it, so I can't say it, but based on like I've seen clips and I've seen, bits and bobs from it. It looks incredible as well.
It does. It is like visually, it is really, really impressive. There just are some parts of the movie that's like, it just doesn't fully fit
for
me. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Next category. This one's a bit controversial. Best director. We've got Jonathan Glazer, Zone of Interest, Yorgos Lanthimos, Poor Things, Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer, Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Justine Triet, Anatomy of a Fall. Two potential snubs, Greta Gerwig, Barbie, and Celine Song, Past Lives.
Yeah.
What do we think?
There was a lot of negative reaction when Greta.
Yeah, a lot of negative,
Hillary Clinton got involved.
Really?
Yeah. When Greta and we'll talk about it later, Margot Robbie got snubbed. Hillary Clinton, like, who should just stay out of the conversation for everything?
Yeah.
She got involved and said, you know, you're still our girls and blah, blah, blah. But I think, like, a lot of the precursor awards, they had Greta in there and they didn't have, like, Justin Trier in there. And so it's kind of assumed that she replaced Greta Gerwig, but she's like still really worthy of the award too. And you kind of look at it, you got like two masters in their craft, like Scorsese and Christopher Nolan, like making, like Nolan making his best movie, Marty making another banger. Yeah. Yorgos Lanthimos, kind of what he does is really one of one. And then Jonathan Glazer by all the reports has made another kind of stellar movie for him too. So it's a really, really stacked category this year.
Yeah.
And so I feel like if Greta wasn't going to get the nod, I'm glad someone like Justine Triet, who Anatomy of a Fall was in my top five of the year. I think what she's been able to do this year, like she wrote and directed the movie, is just phenomenal. So unlucky for Greta, but I think it's a good slate of five directors here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really like the argument that I think people said when she didn't get the nom. I didn't really adhere to it. It was like the whole, like people got sort of sex involved, like sexism and saying, oh, it's the whole point of the movie. Like, I can't believe she, like this classic, like girls not getting that. And it's like, well, that's first of all, like a slate to Justine, who like is also a woman, like an amazing woman director. And I don't know, I just didn't really agree. Like, obviously she's an amazing director. She did, she made a film that grossed 1.4 billion.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think the movie works without Greta.
Yeah, no.
Like, I don't think another director could do what she was able to do. Like, it's such a hard source material where you're working with a character like Barbie who could, like, who's not a person.
She wrote the script as well.
She wrote nominated like, her and her husband that. Wrote it.
Yeah.
So it couldn't have been done without it. And it was, like, such a monumental task for her to create a movie like that, make it successful, make it critically successful, and then make it commercially successful. So that's an achievement in its own right. It is tough for her not to get the nomination, but I think the slate here is still really, really good.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah.
Like, and yeah, that's the thing. Like, we've had just by the nature of how limited the categories are in terms of number, apart from Best Picture, like, people are going to miss out. And she did get a Golden Globe nomination. Celine Song did get a Golden Globe nomination. Yeah, people miss out across these awards throughout the year.
Although
always.
That presenter at the Golden Globe was a...
Oh, horrible. Joe Choi. And like the jokes about like Barbie.
Yeah,
like
that was, that was such poor taste.
Oh, awful. God.
That was anyways, he got one, came to him.
Yeah, so he'll get struck by lightning one day. Yeah.
Predictions, I think... Nolan, he's been winning every single award. I think
he hasn't won this before, right?
Hasn't won this before. He's only been nominated once before in this category
for Dunkirk.
Yeah,
wow.
Which, I thought
that's a bit.
Probably should have got maybe one for Inception. He was going to get one out of all of his other.
Yeah, I mean, he always gets the classic screenplay, like Best Picture,
and he got Best Picture nom for producer. But I think, I think he's a $1 favorite to win.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's his time, and Oppenheimer was incredible.
I just wish I really want to see The Zone of Interest.
Yeah,
same. I've heard nothing but good things.
Yeah.
Should we do the actors first and then do
Best Picture
last?
Yeah, let's
do. Sure. So, Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah. So, we got Emily Blunt, Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks, The Color Purple, American Ferrera from Barbie, Jodie Foster, Niad, and Devine Joy Randall from The Holdovers.
We'll do it again. It's Niad.
Niad?
Yeah.
That's fine. Wait, we know it.
No, we know it.
It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. Having seen The Holdovers, Devine Joy Randall, I did not know she like had this in her. Like, I've only really seen her in very like silly comedic.
I knew her from Only Murders in the Building, which is like the comedy show on Disney Plus with Selena Gomez, Steve Martin, and Martin Short. She's great in them. I think this is a really weak category this year. I don't get the America Ferrera nomination at all.
Yeah.
Like, she's got that one speech, but apart from that, I just feel
I think
like
she was good, but she was just like telling Barbie.
I thought
about
she was
world.
Good, but like, is that worthy of an Oscar nomination? I think it's just a reflection on how like there's not a lot of great supporting supporting roles for women in general.
Yeah.
Compared to the lead character, which is great. Jodie Foster's really, really good in Naiad, opposite Annette Bening.
It's good she's getting back on the horse.
Yeah, mm-hmm. True Detective as well. Haven't seen that.
She's unreal.
Yeah, she's amazing. Danielle Brooks. I saw The Color Purple 2 weeks ago. She's definitely the best part of that movie. And then Emily Blunt. This is her first Oscar nomination, which is pretty cool.
That's cool.
She was great.
I thought she was such a standout in that film. But I heard criticism from people. Someone said, "Oh, she's so like she was so two dimensional." I said, "No,
I wanted a bit more from her character. I just thought she was left out a bit. Yeah. I get the whole focus was on Oppenheimer, but she definitely comes to her own in the third act where they're reviewing his submission and they're going through all those trials. And when she has that scene with shout out to another Aussie Jason Clarke, grilling." Grilling Oppenheimer, and she just gives it back to him.
Yeah, so that's good.
I honestly got like a little bit.
The song in the score for that, it's like Kitty Testifies.
And Kitty Testifies. Like, yes! Yeah, come back to him.
Yeah, but I guess maybe to talk on that, as a supporting actress, Devine has a lot of screen time in The Holdovers compared to the others, like maybe not, or maybe similar to America Ferrera. But I thought Emily Blunt was great. And you could. I think we talked about this in the Oppenheimer episode. Her character, like Kitty Oppenheimer, could have her own story in itself. Absolutely. Like there's a lot untold there. I think Devine will win. She's phenomenal in it.
In a movie that was just dominated by so many amazing performances, Cillian Murphy and Downey Jr., I think Emily Blunt really rose to the occasion. And so did Florence.
Yeah, I thought definitely.
Florence was absolutely amazing, magnificent as well.
Shout out. I would have, I know I'm shitting on America Ferrera here, but I would have taken her out and given it the nod to Julianne Moore in May, December. Okay. I think what she does is amazing in it.
Mm.
And I just think, I don't get the America Ferrera nomination whatsoever.
Yeah,
fair enough.
Oh, well.
Best supporting actor, we've got Sterling K. Brown, American Fiction, Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling, Barbie and Mark Ruffalo, Poor Things. This is a huge category.
There's snubs like Dominic Sessa for The Holdovers.
Yeah.
And then also Charles Melton for May, December. Mm. It was getting a lot of nominations beforehand and missed out too. Yeah. I think they could be considered unlucky. I've seen all the performances besides Sterling K. Brown in American Fiction. I think Downey, he's the favorite. I think he's going to win. I just want to give a shout out to De Niro. Like what he does in the movie, like he's such a terrible, terrible human being.
Yeah.
And there's not like one scene where he's just purely evil, but just what he does is like reminded me of Joe Pesci in The Irishman.
Where it's kind of
like all below the surface.
Yeah.
And even
puts on this mask.
Yeah. And even the ends, like one of the final scenes, I just saw it on Twitter the other day. Someone posted it. It's when he's been like the king, his character, it's when he's been arrested and he's in jail and he's talking to Ernest DiCaprio's character and he still fully believes that. The Osage people, they love him and they still like consider him a friend. And Ernest is like, "You just killed all their relatives." And he goes, no, I'll be forgiven. I'll be forgiven.
Mm.
And so like this guy who's like completely knows what he's doing is terrible, but he just thinks all these people will love him. Yeah. And he's just such an evil character.
Mm.
I mean, De Niro, I hate to say it, but how many more performances are we going to see of him? He's getting old. I hate to say it. I'm so sorry, but like.
He just had another kid.
Oh, wow. What?
Yes, and he's like 80. He's just another kid.
Oh, my God.
What I mean by that is I love him to bits. Every time I see him on screen, my heart just gets filled with so much love. I'm not necessarily worried about him. I'm just like, I'm trying to enjoy the time we have.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's pretty cool because it's like 50 years ago he got his first nom for Godfather Part 2.
He's been in the game forever. You know what I mean? And he nails it every time. And he's such a skux. And he just seems like such a lovely man. Anyways, yeah. I'm fangirling.
The others, though, I think, to dive into Downey, like, I think a lot has been talked about how it was really hard for him to come
break out of Iron Man. Yeah. And what a job he did.
Phenomenal.
Because that would have been so tough for so many people. Oh, the Iron Man actor. But I don't think he's known as that, really.
I wanted to ask this to you guys, of his performance of Strauss. Do you think the, because there's always sort of a scene that gets you the nom sort of thing or takes you over the line to getting a nomination. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's when, at the end, when he's like,
when he finds out?
power stays in the shadows. Do you think it's that exact line?
When you, I think, was that the scene that you realized that he was actually against Cillian Murphy the whole time?
Yeah.
I love that scene.
Yeah, it's kind of like so the reveal good. And kind of like the turn. Right before, which is so funny, right before Nolan, like they get, they reveal it's like the Senator Kennedy. John F. Kennedy. It's like a superhero reveal.
Literally.
It's
like, that was a what's bit your of real a, name?
Robin. Oh, you should keep that. It's a nice name.
That was such a, I was like, Chris, come on, man.
Gosling.
I love Gosling.
So good
in this. He's just one of the most like diverse actors today, like that he's able to do comedy, he can do dramatic roles, and he's just so like it might, like he was the best part of the movie for me. I don't think the movie works without Margot, but what Gosling is able to do in that film is just so funny.
Yeah, and a lot of range in it. Like he's sort of just being like so, I don't even know how to describe it. Like his role is like Ken, but we get like a bit of emotion, obviously all the singing, like he's just so talented. Also, Mark Ruffalo, you need to see Poor Things. He's like so
did not know he had this in
funny and like just disgusting. And again, similar to Downey breaking out of Marvel, I think this role for him was just amazing. And he has this like British accent.
It kind of goes in and out.
But it's actually really good. He's like, they're on this like cruise ship and he's like, I will fucking throw you overboard. And like all this shit.
He's really going over the top with it. But I think that's part of the character.
Yeah,
like, he's just amazing. And like,
I like Mark and everything. He's
like
good.
One of the best. So I looked it up. This is his fourth Oscar nom and all his Oscar noms have been supporting roles. So he had this, Spotlight, The Kids Are Alright, and Foxcatcher.
Oh, good.
True.
All of those. So he is one of the best. Those. Like, if I see him in a cast, I'm like, yeah, sweet. I'm locked in. And you got to snub there. Shout out Dominic Sessa for the holdovers.
First time.
Yeah. It's his first ever performance in a feature film. He was never an extra in a movie beforehand or like just a kid that had one line. This is his first ever performance. And he goes toe to toe with Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
And he is so funny and just brilliant. In the movie, like
he's so good.
I can't wait to watch his career unfold.
Yeah, he I think he's at university, and I was reading into this because I was like, "Who is this guy?" Mm. And he basically lived in the town where they were casting because they were. It's in like New England, northeast of USA, and he just happened to be like living in the town, and he was studying film and like. Heard about this audition and wanted to get like experience on his CV. Ends up getting a role as like the second lead character with Paul Giamatti. And like, honestly, he is so good. And I was watching interviews with Giamatti and apparently he like didn't even need to like give him any tips or advice or anything. He was just like phenomenal.
That's awesome.
You need to see it. It's really, really good. And he has these like sort of lamb chop sideburns. And everyone's saying like that they're going to be like a bit of a comeback because of this guy. So just like
have
a
you seen
cool
him
dude.
In all the award ceremonies as he's going to whoever is stylist.
Oh my god, I'm so sorry.
Whoever his stylist is, shout out to him or her because they've just get him like he's just like kind of like tall, long, like slim, slender bloke, and they've just got him wearing like these. Like he's just all head to toe in black. Mm. He's got like his cool motorcycle leather jackets and he's got the black sunglasses on. And he just looks like he's ripped out straight from the 1970s. Like,
literally.
Like from the holdovers too. And I just can't wait to see what he does in the next few years.
Me too.
But Downey, I think we all agree there.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah,
I think
yeah.
Downey, but my like tied second, I don't know. It like Gosling and Ruffalo could get it as well.
So I know like we all like used to really like Marvel, but a part of me is like, I wish he didn't do that because it would have been so cool to see all the roles that he could have done in those 15 years. And I can't wait to see all the roles that he'll get now.
Yeah.
Because all these directors will be like, oh yeah, I kind of forgot that you're still a great actor.
I think he's going to go into his like Robert De Niro era where he's an old man, getting there, getting old.
He's so charismatic. Like you watch his acceptance speeches.
Yeah.
I remember at the Globes, like speaking about the host before, like he just like alienated so many people. And then you get Downey Jr. up there and he's just holding everyone in the palm of his hand. He's got so many good gags. Like you watch those actors round tables and everyone's just like transfixed to him. He's just the coolest dude.
Mm. Yeah. And like his story as well, like he had a huge drug addiction, sort of fell off the wagon.
Yeah, such a comeback, man.
I'm all for it. Final two before the big best actor category, best actress. We've got Annette Bening, Niad, or Naiad, Lily Gladstone, Kills of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hula, Anatomy of a Fool, Kerry Mulligan, Maestro, and Emma Stone, Poor Things.
Good to see Emma Stone there.
Yeah.
Really stacked category.
Yeah. Emma Stone, I think, was phenomenal. The task of having to play a baby within a
human
adult body and how it learns to move and speak and develop, like, I think it was the hardest character, like, ever to play. And I personally think, even though Lily Gladstone was amazing, they're very different performances.
They kind of split.
I think I would say Emma Stone. Like, she's insanely good in this.
Yeah, it's just what you said. Like, the character arc that she goes on, where essentially she's playing like an infant into like to where she finishes at the end of the movie is just like, I can't remember if I've ever seen someone do that in a movie. And she is probably like one of the best living actresses right now. I don't think that's a bad thing to say. It's a really, really sad category because, like, Margot Robbie could have been nominated there.
That was a big thing.
Shout out to Greta Lee too from Past Lives. I thought she was amazing.
She was great.
I think it's between Lily and Emma Stone. For Lily to do that really in her first starring performance and go head to head with De Niro, but especially DiCaprio
as well. Yeah, wow. And first Native American woman to be nominated for Best Actor.
Yeah, which is just so cool.
Which is huge.
Yeah, I saw the story. She was like about to give up and become like a data analyst.
Oh, yeah.
Then she got this audition with Martin Scorsese and was like, yeah, I might stick with this.
Yeah, I might do that.
But yeah, she did a stunning performance. Very interesting character as well. An interesting like period of history. So I don't know.
I would have taken out Annette Bening and put Margot Robbie in there.
Yeah,
Annette Bening, like, she's a like legend. I think this is like her fourth or fifth Oscar nom, but it's kind of like a biopic. It's just kind of like safe and middle of the road. Yeah. A lot of the older members of the Academy would have voted for her.
Yeah,
but I think it's really split between Gladstone and Emma Stone. I think Emma Stone might get it, and she'll get her second Oscar win.
I hope so.
And then she's like 36, 37, which has just been ridiculous.
She's great though. She's amazing. I do think. With Margot, it's unfortunate she's not here because obviously she's like a very beautiful woman, but she has the acting chops to back it, which I think
she anchors that movie.
Yeah, she absolutely anchors that, and it was written for her.
Yeah.
Obviously, Greta wrote that in mind to her, knowing that she'd be able to carry the film, and she did. Obviously, Ryan backing her up, which he does a great job.
And same with Gosling, but Gosling, majority of his like performance throughout the film is comedic, whereas she. It's kind of like comedic at the start, but then it's very like she's emotional. She's kind of going through like a midlife crisis. The Barbie character and what she's able to do, like the scene, like the Billie Eilish scene at the end, and then just the character arc that her character goes on. Obviously, I would have loved to see her, but also shout out to Sandra Hula. She's amazing in Anatomy of a Fall, and she's also a supporting role in The Zone of Interest. So she's had a She plays the mum in Zone of Interest. So she's had a phenomenal 2023. Yeah. I had one of my favorite performances. I think Anatomy of a Fall was like my third or fourth favorite movie last year. So, and she's just
very keen to see
unreal.
That. Yeah. I think maybe with Margot, it's kind of like a Nolan thing where she's obviously one of the most talented like people currently in the industry, but she will get her time to get a.
I just don't think they like the Academy don't really acknowledge comedy movies a lot. They don't like I know Gosling is there, but a lot of the time they would just look at
drama.
Serious dramatic roles.
Yeah,
so who are we picking?
I'm personally picking Emma Stone. Same. Like one of my favorite performances in recent years.
I think she'll get it. I hope Lily gets it, but I think Emma will get it.
Best actor, Bradley Cooper, Maestro, Colman, Domingo, Rustin, Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright, American Fiction. Really keen to see American Fiction because I've seen those round tables with all these guys. And like, I love Jeremy Wright as like a person and like just the roles that he's done. He's always been very supporting and like doing a lot of, I don't know, just voice.
He's just always there.
Yeah, like he's just always there. But here he is leading something, and I'm keen to see why he's been nominated.
Comes out on Amazon, I believe, February 27th here in Australia.
Okay.
So to all the listeners out there,
yeah,
all tight. Really, really good category this year.
Great category. I think when I saw The Holdovers, that whole movie was such a surprise, and I loved it so much. But Paul Giamatti in it is just phenomenal. He's like, his character stinks like fish, and he's always got sweaty palms, and his eyes, one of them is like kind of dodgy, yeah, and they change. But he is so funny in it, in like an unintentional way.
So David Hemmingson wrote the script, but then Alexander Payne, like, he worked closely with David on the script and like edited some of it. And he said, like, Giamatti's made the joke that Payne told him that they kind of wrote the script together and had Giamatti in mind. So Giamatti's like, I don't know whether or not I take it as a compliment or as an insult that I smell like fish. Yeah. But he's just like, he's so perfect for the role. I think it is Killian's year, but also I think Giamatti won a few weeks ago at the Critic Choice Award.
Going from Fred Claus to The Holdovers.
Going from the villain in
Big Fat Liar.
You know, that's the role. I saw an interview the other day and he said that's the role where that people come up to him the most, and like the movie that they talk about to him is the guy from Big Fat Liar.
That's so funny.
I mean, Killian, I just remember when it came out, everyone was like, he's got it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Before any of these other films had come out.
Yeah.
I unfortunately still haven't seen The Holdovers, like I've said, which
it's
is
just amazing. It's just so, it was my second favorite movie of the year last year.
I might even watch it tonight.
You should watch it tonight. You would love it.
Still in cinemas,
it's so good. Yeah.
Okay. I actually might watch it tonight.
I do think, despite the hype on Killian, like, even Nolan said he's like one of the best actors working in the industry. I think to play such a huge historical figure, you know, the voice work that he did, having to lose weight on set, he like gradually gets more and more thin as like the guilt eats
into
him.
With like, given he lost all that weight and it kind of like constricts his face, his big blue eyes just like pop out.
He does
so much with his eyes in the movie. And he just, again, kind of like Margot Robbie and Barbie, he just like anchors the film. It doesn't work without him. But again, like kind of your point before talking about Jeffrey Wright, like Killian as well hasn't had a lot of leading performances. Like, you look at his collaboration with Nolan, which has spanned 20 years. This is his first leading role in that movie. And Nolan said he doesn't, when he writes the scripts, he doesn't like to have actors in mind because he thinks it's restrictive.
Yeah.
But he said when he started writing Oppenheimer, he knew Killian was the only one who could play him in the way that he wanted to play him.
Yeah.
I would take out Colman Domingo and Bradley Cooper, and I'd put in Leonardo DiCaprio and Andrew Scott, all of us strangers. Yeah. So I watched Rustin the other night, which Colman Domingo's in. So he plays Bayard Rustin, who was the main organizer of the 1963 March on Washington,
right,
where over 100,000, you know, people, majority African Americans, protested on Washington for the whole civil rights issue.
Yeah.
It's just a really middle of the road kind of standard historical movie / biopic kind of. And he puts his all into it, Colman Domingo. And I think it's kind of a legacy nomination because he's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper, I think he's good in the movie. He really goes into it again. But like I haven't really seen Leo do what he did in Killers of the Flower Moon before. Like, he just made himself really ugly.
Yeah.
He was just frowning for 3.5 hours.
He was disgusting.
He was just like,
And he's such a handsome boy.
Like,
and just his character is just so hard to read. Because like, a part of me, I'm like, he does love Lily Gladstone's character, but also at the same time, he's
got no backbone.
But he's poisoning her.
Yeah.
Like, the mother of her children. He's killing, or like, he's helping kill all her sisters and all her family and friends around her. And he's just so torn. I just think what he's able to do in the movie is just amazing. And Andrew Scott, for me, All of Us Strangers is just, you want your heart pulled out, go watch that movie. And
literally, he's just phenomenal.
There's not a lot of dialogue in the movie.
No.
But what he's able to do with his face and kind of the story he's able to tell in that, I think it's just phenomenal. So I would have taken out Cooper and Domingo and put in DiCaprio and Andrew Scott. But I think if there is to be an upset, Giamatti wins it. But I think Killian's got it.
You think
Killian's
got it? Okay.
I think, Andrew Scott was phenomenal. Definitely go see that if you haven't. Who was Brendan Fraser up against last year?
Colin Farrell, Banshees, and also Austin Butler for Elvis.
They
had Bill Nighy for Living, and there was one other nomination which I'm blanking on. I forget.
Okay.
That was a
good one. But I guess it was very much like Austin Butler versus Fraser.
Fraser, yeah.
I think it might, obviously, that was different because
Colin Farrell, Farrell should have won, in my opinion.
But yeah, I do think Killian will win it. I think Giamatti's performance was amazing. And again, once you see it, there's a song in that score that matches like the scene where he's saying goodbye to
Dominic Sessa's character. The music in the Holdovers is just amazing. It feels like you're watching a movie out of the 1970s, the way they grade the color grading in the movie, the way it's shot and all the music. Like, I think there's like one or two James Taylor songs that play in it. Yeah. And you're like, this is sick.
Yeah. So good. So I'm very keen to see.
All right. Let's go. This is the big one.
Let's close it out. American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. That is a huge,
what
huge
a year.
List.
I think what a great year. I think this is the best year since 2019.
Wow. Okay. Yep.
Slate, just because like COVID interrupted years, so a lot of those movies were delayed. But I think, this is unreal. The only movies I haven't seen here are Zone of Interest and American Fiction just because of the release.
Yeah.
Again, Oppenheimer, I think it's too, like, we sound like a broken record, but it's just been winning every single award. If there is to be an upset, maybe The Holdovers, but also there's been a big push recently with Zone of Interest.
I've literally, as of the past month, I've just seen it just
a lot of celebrities, especially like namely Jennifer Lawrence, has like been putting on a lot of screenings for Academy voters.
She has.
Yeah, she has. And then these other, I'm blanking on another person, and they said, Alfonso Cuarón said it's the most important movie of the 21st century.
Wow. Oh my God. Oh, I want to see
From a two-time winning Oscar director, he said that.
Holy smokes.
Maybe if there is going to be a monumental upset, Zone of Interest.
And I wouldn't be surprised, A24 once again coming through.
Just spitting
with like
them
a
out.
Late bloomer. I mean, I'm sure it's been out, it would have come out, before, but it's a classic A24 that's, it's hasn't been out in sort of mainstream cinemas.
Yeah. I think it's in the international category.
Yes, it is.
And it will likely win that.
Yes, it will.
So could that maybe taint the best?
It could, but also you had Parasite a few years ago winning both categories.
That's true. Yeah, that was wild.
Shout out to, funnily enough, actually, I'll just give a little tidbit on Anatomy of a Fall. It's not nominated in French's, like France have got a movie up. It's called The Taste of Things.
Yep.
And that took Anatomy of a Fall's place in the international film category because Justine Triet, when she won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, she completely smashed and criticized Macron, the French president, about a lot of his policies, especially them to do with like protesting. So the theory is, the conspiracy is that she's kind of been blackballed by the French Film Academy or whatever. God. And so that's why her film isn't up in the international
film. But it's in the best picture
because everyone's like, oh, it's an awesome movie.
Yeah.
But I think Oppenheimer will win just because it's like, it is the movie of 2023.
Yeah.
Like that whole Barbenheimer movement was just unbelievable. And like it's made close to $1 billion, and it's a 3-hour and 8-minute biopic about a guy who created the atomic bomb, but most of it is just people in rooms talking.
Literally,
For a film to do, like there's the one action scene, if you want to call it, is the Trinity test. And you're just, majority of that time, you're just looking at guys pressing buttons, waiting for an explosion to happen. That's
Josh
it.
Beck.
That's, yeah. That's like, the most, that's like the most exciting part of the movie, like in quotation marks. So
yeah.
I think if for it to lose, it'd be ridiculous, and I think it's.
I want to see him. I want to see him get it.
Yeah, me too.
I do want to see him get it. Can I just say as well, movie that I thought should be here. Have you guys seen Scrapper?
Yes.
No.
Yes. What do you think of with Scrapper? Harris Dickinson? Yeah. I thought it was really good.
I thought it should have been somewhere.
Estranged father.
Yeah, yes. It's like a British. It's like quite a wholesome pick. I thought that was my snub.
Speaking of Harris Dickinson. Snub, The Iron Claw, got 0 Oscar nominations.
Is it
That's
part
wild.
Of this year?
Yeah, it's part of this year.
Oh, that's wild. Wow.
It's got 0 Oscar nominations.
Oh, my God.
So I didn't mention before, but like Zac Efron,
He
could have been up there for best actor.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
What he does. What like, the F? Have we all seen the movie?
I have not. I need to see it.
It's
brutal. It rips your heart out, dude. Like,
really?
And Zac Efron is like so good in the film.
Best performance?
Best performance he's ever given yet. Oh easily.
He's good. It's a shame that he's got that High School Musical looming over his back.
But his veins just pop out of the screen. Oh, yeah. That's ridiculous. Yeah, he's a big but yeah, guy. Oppenheimer, I think for me, best picture. Yep.
Yeah, I think so too. Crazy year. A lot of range there. You got Past Lives, Poor Things.
Great year.
I love how Past Lives got a nomination. Like such a
me
small
too.
Movie.
Yeah.
A24 again, but like such a small independent film. It's Celine Song's first like directorial debut. Mm.
Yeah,
and
it
gets
nominated.
A
yeah.
fucking best picture nomination. Yeah. Like, that's awesome.
Again, A24 just slowly taking over, which
yeah,
is great.
I mean,
to
last
see.
Year was their year. Mm. But they're still sneaking in with Zone of Interest and Past Lives.
Can I just say with Oppenheimer, it's so funny with Christopher Nolan. So he was just a longtime collaborator, worked with Warner Brothers, and then they fucked him off. And then he signs with the Universal, does this movie, and then it's like the second biggest movie of 2023, and he's going to win Best Director, and it's going to win Universal Best Picture.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed.
Warner Bros.
Yeah. Well, they did
have Barbie, so they did make heaps of money.
They had Barbie? Okay, never mind. But still, the one that made $1.5 billion.
They could have had Barbie and Oppenheimer.
Yeah,
imagine that.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Also, a film that was shortlisted for nomination for Best Short Film, Teacups.
Yeah.
Yes.
Didn't get it, unfortunately, which is sad because those guys, we had them on the show, as you might have known. They did such a great for their first
with Hugo Weaving, isn't it?
With Hugo Weaving. Yep. Have you seen the film?
No, I haven't.
It's out on YouTube now. Dude, watch it and bring a box of tissues.
Okay, yeah, it's like 8 minutes long and it is phenomenal.
Teacups, yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, they got heaps of awards. They absolutely swept award season, but unfortunately didn't get a nom for best short film animated.
Was sad to see that, but I don't know what the story was with Whiplash, but I hope that it gets picked up and turned into an actual.
Yeah, so Whiplash was a short film by Chazelle. And then it got turned into a feature film.
I mean, I don't think I think they've sort of exhausted all they can with that story of.
You reckon?
Yeah, I think so. Mm. But I'm excited to see what they do next because they're such a great team.
Yeah.
Finbar Watson. Mm.
And Alan Green.
Yeah.
And hopefully you're on here for their score that they do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
in their project in future.
Well, I'm very excited for this year's Oscars, although awards don't mean everything.
Yes.
It is still fun.
Art is subjective.
Yeah, art is subjective, but it's still a fun evening to predict.
Jimmy Kimmel.
Is it that same guy?
Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, whatever. All right. But it'll still be a good celebration of another amazing year. And I'm keen to see all those ones that I haven't because it's always a good like audit of what you didn't see and what you should go see. So.
I've got my homework to do, guys.
Well, well, and all the listeners, go out and watch these movies because they're awesome.
Me too.
They are.
I will. I've been pretty busy bee over this past month, but I will find some time to go to the cinema.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Cinemates. Make sure to follow us and leave a review on your chosen streaming platforms. Also, check out our Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube channel for more Cinemates content. In the spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge Australia's First Nations people as the traditional owners and custodians of the land and pay respect to the Cammeraygal people of the Eora Nation upon whose country Cinemates is based. We honour the storytelling and culture of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities across Australia. Also, in the spirit of chatting with mates, remember it's always important to check in with those around you. Whether it's friends, family, or colleagues, sometimes they may be going through a hard time. Chatting with them may reassure them that they aren't alone. If you or anyone you know is ever struggling, call Lifeline on 13 11 14.